The Spirit Oasis. Business over family was a balancing act Yang Chen knew well. She'd planned her North Pole visit so she could attend to both. Maybe she should have swapped the order. Prioritizing matters of state hadn't helped her with Ouyaluk. The search for her sister had brought Yang Chen back to the Spirit Oasis, a tiered puzzle box. Water inside land, inside water, inside ice, behind an unassuming wooden door. The cove, cut into the depths of Agna Kala, had been created without the touch of human hands, possibly by Tui and La, the moon and ocean spirits. Yang Chen had better cause to believe the story than most. As she crossed one of the arched bridges to the small green island at the center of the oasis, she was bathed in warmth. Underneath her feet, the waters were still and reflectionless, and her steps drummed against the planks louder than she wanted them to, announcing her presence. She could smell the ever-ripe satsuma, the always-blooming osmanthus, the lush vegetation, nurtured and kept at the peak of vitality by the energies of the oasis, heedless of the season and temperature outside. It was a good thing she hadn't brought pick and pock. They would have gorged on the fruits until the sacred site was barren. The pool at the heart of the north was not a perfect circle. One lip bowed inward, as if Tui and La knew people, with their needs and desires and weaknesses, would come to the edge of the water in search of guidance. The spirits had granted human beings a nice place to sit. Yang Chen knelt down on the grass and pulled her legs under her into the lotus position. The eternal koi swam in an endless loop before her, their wake lapping against the sides of their pond, their entire universe. Yang Chen had drunk the customary tea brewed from leaves plucked from one of the bushes of the oasis itself, and borrowed vigor coursed through her veins. She had to be present, vigilant. The Spirit Oasis was a place of ultimate peace. It could easily become a place of unspeakable danger. Her knuckles met in her lap, touching arrow point to arrow point. A fist opens or closes. It cannot do both at once. She had meditated to search for Jetson in the spirit world before, many times, always slipping through the veil with ease. She would relax, close her eyes, and then open them to the sourceless light, find herself standing in a verdant field or a welcoming forest. Spirits, silent and chattery, would greet her, great mute trees bowing solemnly at the trunk until their canopies brushed the ground, toadstools singing in five-tone harmony. A bestiary might gather, animal-shaped spirits flocking to Yang Chen out of inquisitiveness, hooved and winged creatures taking turns to nuzzle her outstretched hand. The spirits who could and would talk required the most caution. Yang Chen had thought about why they could be so unsettling, why so much judgment lay behind their eyes when they had eyes. Jetson had given her the answer long ago. Spirits rarely asked questions or struggled with discontent. They simply existed. Which meant, in any encounter, you were always the one bothering them. The fault had already been decided. Humans were intruders by nature. This would be the first time she meditated at the Spirit Oasis, using the clue the phoenix eels of Ma'inka had dangled before her, the vision they'd tormented her with. The fog. I need to find the fog. Sometimes a traveler could cross over to a known location in the spirit world if their determination and focus were sufficient. Picture the fog. The skin on the back of her palms tightened, distending the arrows tattooed there. She couldn't shake the frustrations of the day. Business first had been the wrong decision. Oyuluk's rejection of peace was a story immemorial. The four nations were always trying their level best to march off a cliff. And here she was, the latest avatar attempting to drag them back from the edge. None of her past lives had succeeded in curbing the self-destructive nature of humanity. If a child given every comfort won't stop screaming, leave it in the field. Over her closed eyes, Yang Chen's brow pinched. The strange, uncharitable koan bounced around her head, a flapping bird in search of the cage's exit. She wondered who let it in. Then she remembered. It was a lesson from the pamphlet of Guru Shokan, the ancient philosopher whose works she'd been introduced to by Zongdu Chaisi, of all people. She made a little sound with her nose, ruffling the quiet of the oasis. Maybe Shokan was right. Maybe the world, blithely dancing along the precipice, needed to know what it was like to fall. The common misconception about meditation was that you were supposed to completely erase the slate of your mind. Untrue. Thoughts were allowed to come and go. The duty of the meditator was to observe them until they passed, proving you and your mind's chatter were not one and the same. But this idea, humanity being left to reap exactly what it sowed, stuck with Yang Chen, like a burr clinging to her robes. It lingered too long without her being able to sequester it. She was still savoring the taste of vindictiveness when the physical realm tilted backward on its axis and the spirit world swallowed her whole. Yang Chen tumbled along a patch of unknown ground, flailing without grace, her upturned robes trapping her limbs. An entrance this ungainly meant her body had passed through the boundary and not just her spirit. She found her feet like an earthbender, sensing the plane of ground and then lowering her center below her axis as soon as her feet touched down. Her roll turned into a skid, into a crouch. She stood up and arranged her shawl back into place with one hand on her guard. She wasn't in the cheery meadows that had foiled her search so many times in the past. Nothing grew on the loose, rocky soil as far as the eye could see. The sky was the color of an angry sunset, a harsh, over-dyed orange. Well, this is different. Maybe the ugliness of her thoughts as she made the crossing had affected where she'd landed. She tried to take a step forward, but sensed a tug on her leg, like it was a lodestone needle, a nudge that threatened to become stronger. Fight the unseen forces, or follow them. For now, Yang Chen chose the path of least resistance. She hiked in the direction she was allowed, and soon found herself descending a gradual slope. A sheet of white mist appeared around her ankles. When a shadow loomed over her path, she looked up and saw massive talons of stone curling in on her, each one a predator's claw the size of an air temple tower. The hand closes. Jetson, wrapped in gauzy vapor. Yang Chen's own nightmares had laid out the carpet for her. She was on the right track. The shawl around her shoulders felt heavier as she walked downhill, the scratchiness of her robes rubbing her knees raw. Her clothes were damp. From the mist, her own fear sweat, both. The fog rose higher than her head. Yang Chen nearly ran smack into a sheer rock wall, and after feeling which way it twisted, came to realize she was entering the mouth of a canyon. Never mind hands, what does a mouth do? She fumbled along the wall for guidance, as if the rules of common sense still applied, and she were navigating a simple maze. The other side could close on her faster than expected and wedge her into a trap. It attaches to a throat. It consumes. Instead of slowing down, she began to shuffle through the mist faster. Switched to a light brush of her fingertips against the rock so she could jog. Not showing enough courage in the spirit world was how she lost Jetson. Suffering from the same mistake was inexcusable. Shokin would have agreed. An outline of solidness flickered off to the side, and she abandoned the canyon wall in pursuit. The mists were uneven and dotted with thinner pockets that wandered like floating strands in the eye. There the figure went again, meandering in the opposite direction. Yang Chen decided to take the risk and inhaled deeply. "Jetson!" she called out. The echo that came back did not belong to her. Dozens and dozens of unfamiliar voices assaulted her ears. They could have come from the nuns of the Western Temple themselves, and Yang Chen still wouldn't have been able to recognize them through the sheer anguish, twisting each one beyond the limits of what a human could produce. Inside the depths of the fog, people were being tortured to their wits' end. The chorus of pain. She'd heard it before, when the phoenix eels of Ma'inka had shown her a vision of Jetson. Her sister's spirit was trapped in here somewhere. She was certain of it. Yang Chen immediately stepped forward, the balls of her feet digging into the ground as she spun full circle and scythed a blast of wind through the canyon. The white vapors parted, but nowhere near as much as they should have. The scant space she managed to clear was dotted with humans, silently stooped over by invisible yokes, or with their heads thrown back in full-throated screams. She ran to the nearest person, a man wearing strange ornate nightclothes drenched in blood. As she checked him for injuries, he shook with glottal hiccups, choking on air. His braided queue frayed halfway down its length like severed rope. Yang Chen patted him down for wounds, focusing on his hands where the stains were deepest. "Tell me where you're hurt," she said. It occurred to her why his garments had struck her as odd. They'd gone out of fashion 200 years ago. He murmured, more gulping noises than words. "I didn't hear you," Yang Chen said. She was on the verge of jamming her fingers into his mouth to check he hadn't swallowed his tongue. "I'm sorry," the man suddenly shrieked. "I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to." A child's apology after breaking something important. Yang Chen let go of the man and slowly backed away. He wasn't injured. The blood soaking his sleeves wasn't his. She bumped into someone behind her and wheeled around. A woman in plain farmer's garb stared at Yang Chen, eyes wild with disbelief. "Nothing," she moaned. "It was all for nothing. Why did we... for nothing? How could we be such fools?" The woman latched onto Yang Chen, gripping her shoulders with the strength of an animal's bite. Yang Chen wrenched free, nearly strangling herself with her collar. She tried to run back the way she came, but at every turn was hemmed in by people from eras by and gone, shambling toward her, hobbled by their pain. She could make out what they were saying clearly now. Cries of helplessness snagged at her like thorns. Hands reached for her as she fled.
"You can't deny me this, not after everything I've done for you."
"I lost him. He was right there, and I lost him."
"I will get what I'm owed. Do you hear me? That was my last chance. That was my last chance. That was my last chance."
The fog no longer granted her passage. It tugged at her face like matted cobwebs, bogged down her ankles like beach mud. Her exposed skin felt swollen and itchy. Instinct told her the vapor was squeezing through her pores and working its way under her fingernails. The fog was alive. It was trying to become a part of her. Yang Chen covered her nose and mouth and ran without breathing. But she could get only so far before her vision swam, threatening to plunge her into a dark sea. She keeled over into a crawl and dragged her body as far as she could. Her physical form had become a liability. She always had to try to outdo Jetson, didn't she? She'd lose both halves of herself instead of the one. She might laugh were she not trying to keep the fog out of her airways. By now, she was sure it was a spirit. Malign and hungering. None of her predecessors had gone out quite like this, or else their memories would have bubbled to the surface. Avatar Yang Chen shunned all fears, but she wasn't immune to the squeeze of shame and humiliation on the guts, the drumming of an out-of-control heart. Before she blacked out, she put aside her misgivings and begged for help from the people who had been sources of only pain and grief in her life. "Save me," she called out to her past lives through the Avatar state. "Please." Previously, "Admit it," Kavik said as he drew water from the stacks of damp linen towels arrayed before him, bundling the moisture into a wobbling sphere. "This whole secret society recruitment pitch was just a way to get me to do your laundry." "I can find better launderers in this city than you," Mama Ayunarak said. "I can also find more promising recruits for that matter." She flicked her wrist at a nearby barrel and sent twice as much water as he was bending over the towels, soaking them through once more. "Again, drier, add it to what you have." Several of the neat piles fell over under the force of a Unarok's waterbending, but there was no point in complaining. The rule not to move the cloth at all applied to him, not her. So did the demand for speed and thoroughness, and minimal motion. Above his head came the footfalls of visitors to Gidu Shrine, residents of Bin-Ur, paying their respects to ancestors and spirits. He could hear thumps when they dropped to their knees to bow, and could make out the faint claps of hands coming together before smoking incense. The existence of a secret basement had been a complete surprise when a Unarok showed him his new home, where he'd wait out the heat. The one time he'd run an errand inside the shrine, he'd broken in through the roof.
"Stop making that face," a Unarok said. "You know this exercise could mean life and death."
She'd explained many times. Operatives of the White Lotus, and really any clandestine organization, needed to move without a trace. A waterbender in a city not covered in ice and snow like Bin-Ur would be forced to dry their surroundings after using their element if they wanted to keep their presence hidden. He'd kept himself from freezing to death once in the Blue Manse by bending water off his body, but hadn't thought much about where it had landed.
"Do earthbenders have to repack the dirt they use?" Kavik had asked. "Are firebenders just plain out of luck if they burn something they can't hide?"
"Yes," a Unarok answered without a sliver of humor. "We've lost people that way."
He believed her. Kavik had disposed of bodies in Jandori and watched a man get murdered in front of his eyes.
He'd do whatever it took to keep from getting stuffed into a packing crate or fed to shark squids.
He dried away. Dried his heart out, dried like the wind.
"When I say don't make that face, I mean it," a Unarok snapped. "You may have to bend under watch without being noticed, and you don't want to give away signals. The little thing you do with your lips is getting worse."
Kavik didn't know he did a little thing with his lips, but he clamped them shut anyway and concentrated. A Unarok was a tough Sifu, but she was also the only support he had left in Bin-Ur these days. His parents had been given passes to return home to Longstretch in the north, where they remained safe and oblivious to the real business of either of their sons. As far as they were concerned, Kavik was still doing Avatar work.
not hiding in a White Lotus safe house until the authorities of the Four Nations lost his scent. Under different circumstances, being tapped to join a Unorok's friends would have been thrilling. An ancient society, operating in the shadows, dedicated to philosophy, beauty, and truth. The chance to pull strings outside the confines of national loyalties to maintain peace across the world. Maybe Bin-Ur hadn't been a force of corruption in his life, he'd allowed himself to imagine. The city had put him through so many travails to give him the skills necessary to serve a higher cause. But it quickly became clear the White Lotus protected itself by walling off its branches from each other, keeping the right hand separated from the left. Kavik was the pinky nail, a new growth that could be trimmed as easily as kept. If the safe house was the port of call toward adventure, Kavik was stuck on the loading docks. He guessed a Unorok was still arguing over his admission with her peers.
"The entire job is about waiting," she had said in a rare moment of sympathy. "In that sense, it's no different than the petty errands you used to run for the Shangs."
In the meantime, he trained next to empty planting pots, piles of desiccated bulbs, maintenance tools that hadn't had the rust knocked off them since before the platinum affair. Other goods with long shots of becoming useful one day. He left the safe house only under close supervision, and had narrowly managed to avoid clawing his eyes out in fits of boredom-induced madness. The mildew smell barely registered anymore. Kavik heard a particular pattern of thumps from the floor above. He paused in his task, recognizing the gate and who it belonged to. His fingers crooked, ready for a fight. As soon as he saw the pair of feet at the top of the stairs, he launched the water he'd pulled from the towels, freezing the intruder's soles to the wooden planks. Lesson one of a Unorok's combat training. Hit first, preferably before the enemy even marks you as the enemy. Do, the firebender who ran the cook staff, pitched forward so violently he fell out of his boots, cursing Kavik's name on the way down. A Unorok reacted with blinding speed. She unfroze the very water Kavik had used. Lesson two. Bend what your opponent is bending when you have no other choice. And swept it in a lap around the room. She caught the laundry in a web of water. Lesson three. Move your surroundings with your element when you don't have enough of your element, and shoved it into a heap at the bottom of the stairs. Do landed in the cloth, unharmed. He sprang to his feet and whipped a damp rag off his chubby face.
"You nearly broke my ankles, you dunderhead!"
Kavik shrugged at him. Do, perhaps because he was about 10 years older, had thought it fine to put a fire dagger to Kavik's throat the last time they sparred, close enough to leave a line of blisters. A little payback was in order. A Unorok made a shut-it gesture at Kavik, even though he hadn't spoken yet.
"Why are you here?" she asked Do.
The Junior Lotus was supposed to visit only once every 3 days. Something must have been wrong. He beckoned his superior closer and whispered in her ear. A Unorak listened, her face set in stone. She didn't take any time to respond once Do had finished relaying the lengthy message.
"Tell them I'll handle it," she said.
Kavik burned with questions. Who was them? Were they more powerful than Mama Unorak? How high on the rungs of ordinary society did the Order of the White Lotus reach? What was it? A Unorok gave Do a headshake toward the upper floor, indicating he should leave. The younger Lotus balked when he realized his superior's plans would not involve him, and he gave Kavik an incredulous scowl as he tugged his boots back on. Kavik couldn't resist giving him a wave bye-bye as he left. The smugness was only for show. There was no guarantee a Unorok would privilege him with any information. "What was that about?" he asked tentatively. She gave him a look from head to toe, as if she were comparing his growth to a chart. He didn't know how much he could have changed, planted below the surface of the earth.
I'm taking you home, she said.
Home? The Northern Water Tribe. Is the heat off?
It most definitely is not.
One thing was clear. A Unarok had sway. The brambles of the Bin-Ur pass control office fell before the sharpness of her whispers, and the two of them were on a ship to Agna-Kala the very next morning. Not once, from the march past the harbor master's office, to the nervous wait on the misty docks, to the boarding of the sleek clipper, where they asked for names, fake or otherwise. It hadn't been this easy for the Avatar. She'd been forced to sneak Kavik to the Northern Air Temple as a staging point just to get him across the waters. The discomforting thought of how much Yang Chen had to do with so little made him seek the railing of the ship to feel the wind and icy spray in his face.
You'd better get your stomach back for open water, and quick,
a Unarok said when she found him leaning as close as he could toward their destination. She thought he was seasick.
We're entering bubble style, like I taught you.
In the hold was an umiak, open-topped and spacious enough to carry multiple people. When the clipper reached the drop-off point, still out of sight from shore, the crew lowered the boat into the water, with Kavik and a Unarok inside. The two of them shoved off with bending alone, no paddles. Speed would be more important than endurance. The umiak slid over the waves without a sound. Up ahead, a raised promontory of ice stood guard over the coast. The natural tower was a watch post they'd have to sneak by. A Unarok was already in position, riding in a crouch, her arms gripping the sides. Kavik did the same, getting as low as possible.
Ready, he muttered.
Momentum carried them forward, while she counted down quietly until the right moment.
Roll,
a Unarok commanded. Together they leaned sharply to the side, yanking on the starboard edge, unbalancing the craft. The bottom of the umiak rose up and closed over them, like a giant snapper scallop protecting its pearl. Kavik hung on tight to his seat. A Unarok did the same, only she had the harder task while they capsized. She hauled the prow deeper into the sea, using her weight, and bent a pocket into the water around them with her free hand. The entire hull dipped below the surface and trapped the breathable air. They hung upside down in a little cocoon of her making.
Get lower,
a Unarok said over her shoulder, her voice strained.
And get us back up to speed.
Blood was already rushing to Kavik's head. Lower relative to the boat, she meant. He flattened away from the delicate barrier protecting them from an entire icy ocean and pushed the umiak along in a series of one-armed thrusts. They traveled inverted below the watch post, gliding across a mirror world hidden from view, their sky dark and deadly. Nothing under them but a fall into the clouds. Kavik's shoulders burned, and the lashings he held onto cut into his fingers until they were numb. Their silence could have fooled another passenger into thinking the trick of stealth effortless, when in reality, they were trying with all their might not to die. A Unarok lost her grip for a moment. The air bubble calved. Kavik caught a face full of seawater and hacked burning salt out of his throat as he leaned farther back in the hull. The ice wall loomed ahead, a ghostly blue stripe painted across the inky water, and he thought he spotted the entrance to the secret tunnel they were aiming for, a hole shaped like a jagged crocus. But Iunarok's muscles were shaking under her parka. They had to get there, now. Kavik grabbed the sides of the vessel with both arms and kicked ferociously, bending with his feet, an act less common for their style. The water behind them formed a sideways spout and propelled them forward. He'd seen the Avatar do this maneuver straight into the sky with her native element. They regained their lost speed and then some. More air sheared away, leaving them with nothing to talk through. The last thing Kavik heard from a Unarok was a garbled,
Up. Our up.
But he had no control or vision right now. He had to trust the senior Lotus would land them on target. He heard the snap of a thin ice crust giving way, and suddenly, the Umiak lurched out of his grasp. He slid along a frozen ramp that twisted and turned, like an intestinal tract, before landing on an open patch of hardpack, ocean water puddling around him. They were in a cavern in the ice wall, lit by oil lamps. The boat lay off to the side, the hull shredded. Kavik looked up to see a young woman with a long braid rushing over to them, her hands already covered in water like a medic.
"You dolt!" she cried at Kavik. "You could have killed the executor!"
"No,"
a Unirok said. She sat upright and cricked her back.
"He made the right call. We would have been caught had he not acted quickly."
She gave Kavik a nod approaching respect. A rare gift. "This wasn't the first time I've had to rush an entry." Kavik sorted away the fact that in her distress, their contact had let slip a Unirok's title within the White Lotus. He'd figure out where Executor fell in the organization later.
"I'm okay too, by the way."
The young woman scowled and hunched closer to her superior, as if she could section off Kavik with her shoulder.
"Our friend..."
A Unirok rolled back the spilled seawater and used it to close the tunnel behind them.
"You can say the Avatar, Ivalu. We're with Inside Company. Did her meeting with the chief take place?"
"Yes, but..."
Ivalu glanced one more time at Kavik before continuing. "We lost sight of her a day ago."
"Is she not in Agna Kala anymore?"
A Unirok remained measured, but by force. She preemptively gestured for calm from everyone in the cave.
"She made it past our watchers."
"I don't believe so," Ivalu said, though she didn't sound completely sure. "Her bison and lemurs are still here, and she didn't come with a glider."
Something about the statement didn't make sense to Kavik. "Hold on," he said. "How do you know where her lemurs are?"
Pick and Pock were tiny flying horrors. They came and went as they pleased and could disappear into the skies. They could hide in crevices and attack unseen from any angle. "They're hovering around the back court of the chief's temple, just yowling and scratching at the ice," Ivalu said. "They haven't moved since..."
"Since a day ago?"
A Unirok's stare was an accusation.
"You do know where that wall leads, right?"
"We're not fools. We checked to see if she was meditating at the oasis," Ivalu said. "She's not there."
Kavik still couldn't let the twinge in his gut pass. They had to have been talking about the spirit oasis. Children in the water tribe grew up listening to stories about the cove's warmth and wonder and beauty. Some of those tales, however, were cautionary. The rash child who wandered in without respect was always taught a lesson. Kavik once had his own brush with perhaps spirits. Years ago, after he and his brother Kalyan got lost in a great blizzard, only surviving by the skin of their teeth, they'd told their parents afterward the route they were sure they'd trekked through. His parents had the same reaction as Ivalu.
"But we checked that path on that day. The weather was clear. We couldn't find you."
"Her body," Kavik said. "You mean her body's not there?" The lamplight flickered. A Unirok's shout echoed through the cave.
"We have to go, now!"
Kavik had been to the capital of the Northern Water Tribe a few times as a child, for the new moon festivals. The towers of Agna Kala had been, and still were, taller than any Midler building he'd ever laid eyes on. During daytime celebrations, sunlight would bounce off the fish-scale roofs and faceted walls like a shower of jewels. Artisans shaped entire blocks to honor the places where they were born,
their elders, their legends, carving and freezing stories into the walls, delighting the citizens with the malleability of water. Now, as he and Ayunarok and Ivalu raced through the streets under the faint moonlight, the multi-story residence, blanketed by shadow, seemed to lean in over him, giants paying a keen, unsettling interest in the bugs at their feet. Would they make it in time? Could they scuttle fast enough? Ayunarok led them through alleyed twists and bends with the main streets only partially in view, slivers of the canals passing by. They must have been taking the route that least exposed them to guard patrols. Even with the Avatar's life potentially in danger, they sacrificed speed for secrecy. A hands and knees scramble through a short tunnel deposited them into a courtyard. Kavik had to tear his eyes away from the massive palace rising into the darkened sky. He was trespassing on royal ground, and he didn't know the punishment they'd face if caught. There'd been no warning stories about this kind of situation growing up. Ayunarok brought them to a wooden gate in the ice wall. Two shadows clutched at the handles, hissing, and Kavik thought that a pair of malevolent imps had been ordered by the higher spirits to guard the passage. But it was only Pick and Pock. As soon as they saw Kavik, they launched themselves at his face. It took more willpower than he'd ever exerted in his life not to scream and flail wildly. They sniffed his hair, seeming to recognize him, and jumped up and down on his shoulders. They might have been asking him to hurry. "Stay here," he said, before feeling incredibly stupid. Yang Chen talked to them all the time, but he assumed their responses were due to some kind of avatar-powered connection, not because they understood speech in general. To his surprise, they let go of him and went back to perching on the gate. Ayunarok ordered Ivalu to keep watch. When she opened the circular door, a rush of warm air struck Kavik in the face. He leaped through quickly out of habit, not wanting to waste heat. Ayunarok followed and closed the barrier, plugging them inside. Without needing to be told, Kavik lowered his head. He and Ayunarok pressed their hands together and quickly muttered out words of deference, protection, and acknowledgement that they were merely human. He kept going for as long as his elder did, and when she fell silent, he opened his eyes. Before them stretched a pond as clear as glass. Only brief flashes across the surface betrayed the presence of water. A thin falling stream at the far end paused in an ice shelf halfway down before completing its descent behind a green island steaming with life. The bow-shaped archway of the spirit oasis beckoned them across the distance. No one else was here. Were they too late? Too early? Wrong entirely? He started forward, but was held back by Ayunarok. Her answer was always to wait. The steady hiss of the waterfall made Kavik feel like they were trapped in an hourglass. The air inside the cove was thick and hard to breathe. He wiped sweat off his forehead with his wrist. The motion revealed Yang Chen lying on the island. The Avatar, right there, when a second before she hadn't been. Kavik had to pass his hand back and forth a few times to make sure he hadn't somehow conjured an illusion by accident. The only explanation he could think of was that he'd just witnessed her return to the physical realm from the spirit world. Her body suddenly jerked, her elbow dragged upward as attached to a rope.
"Something's followed her," Ayunarok said. "Something's followed her through."
A prickle crawled over Kavik's skin. Yang Chen flopped over, her head lolling. Her eyes glowed, casting light through the cavern. Through the radiance, he saw a spray of mist shaking this way and that, anchored to the Avatar, but struggling to break free. The vapors bloomed and coiled into an opaque, soupy mass that dragged Yang Chen back and forth over the grass. There wasn't enough room for two people on either of the thin walkways extending along the edges of the cove. Kavik and Yunrok took one each, racing each other to get to the Avatar. Kavik arrived at the island first and stumbled through the unnatural cloud, waving his arms. He reached Yangchen and tried to haul her to safety, but an umbilical connection resisted him. A Yunrok ran across the opposite bridge, stripping water off the ice wall, and slashed a liquid blade at the fog that had congealed above the central island. The pull on the Avatar didn't slacken. Yangchen convulsed in his arms. As a Yunrok tried to land blows against their intangible foe, Kavik looked around, desperate for an idea. His gaze landed on the sacred pool at the heart of the oasis, said to be like no other water in the world. Surely he'd be forgiven in these circumstances, no? Yangchen was the spirit's avatar as well. They needed their end of the bridge as much as humans did. By every oath ever sworn, I am sorry for this. Kavik pulled water from the tiny pond. He nearly caught one of the eternal koi in his bubble and winced as it flopped back into its home with a splash. Once he'd borrowed enough, he threw it over the Avatar like a blanket. He'd only thought to shield her, but as soon as the water came between her and the fog, a silent twist doubled him over. He covered his ears, but it didn't help. The mists screamed with a voice he heard in the marrow of his bones. His own tears blinded him. By the time he looked up again, the grayness was gone, as if the whole attack had been a shared hallucination. There was no rift in the oasis that he could see. He heard coughing behind him. Kavik turned to see the Avatar sitting upright. The sacred water from the koi pond that had repelled the hostile spirit was just an ordinary puddle now. Yangchen flung the damp end of her long hair out of her face. Her jaw dipped when she saw her rescuers. There was a weighty pause. Kavik had never been in the presence of such a concentration of wisdom and authority. The Avatar, master of all four elements, and the Executor, senior member of the White Lotus. Both of these women had the power to shape the world.
You know, this is why spiritual journeys are taken with partners,
a Yunrok said to Yangchen in the exact same tone she used to lecture Kavik about the nuances of blotting water from paper.
Basic safety.
Yangchen lay back down and rolled away onto her side. You're not my boss, she muttered. Coming to the table. The summit took place in a private home, a small apartment along one of the branch canals. Kavik didn't know if it belonged to the Avatar or the White Lotus. Given how unfriendly the two sides seemed, the room would probably never get used again after tonight. The location had been exposed to the enemy. A shame, because the inside was comfortable and warm, a far cry from the cellar he'd been hiding in. Kavik claimed the corner mattress, a double layer of finned caribou fur, since no one else would. Yangchen and a Yunrok were both reluctant to sit at first, but eventually they took places opposite each other on a thick rug in the center of the room. For a while, there was quiet. It had been a long day for everyone. Exhaustion reigned.
"Does anyone want to explain what that fog was?" Kavik finally asked.
"A spirit." Yangchen examined the angled designs formed by the yarns. "I think it invades the mind somehow. Forces its captives to relive their pasts." She smiled bitterly. "Lucky for me, I have too many pasts. Too many worst days of too many lives. I might have glutted it and been spat back out into the physical world."
"What were you doing?"
"I was searching for someone trapped inside. I wanted to free them from their suffering."
"And was this single lost soul worth risking the life of the Avatar?"
a Yunrok interjected. Yangchen's eyes flicked upward, blazing with fury. She swallowed the retort she so obviously wanted to give and changed the subject.
"You've joined the White Lotus,"
she said to Kovic. She made it sound like an accusation.
"I had no other choice," he said. "The Thin Claws were hunting me down, and I still needed help getting my parents out of Bin-Ur. The White Lotus extended their hand. They're protecting my mother and father in Longstretch as we speak."
He exhaled hard. This next part would be difficult.
"The only thing I had to trade for our safety was unanimity."
He could hear Yang Chen grow still.
"I told them what I knew about the Firebenders. Chai Si, my brother. They know everything that happened up to the point when we last spoke."
The pain of their parting conversation, Yang Chen telling him he was no companion of hers, should have sunk to the floor of the sea by now. Kovic pushed it down again and steeled himself for the Avatar's anger, but it never came. At least, not for him.
"I can't blame you for that," she said. "I did the same thing once, thinking the White Lotus could be trusted to keep a secret for the greater good."
Hostility rolled off her in waves.
"Instead, they leaked information about unanimity to the Earth King."
"That's a baseless accusation,"
a Unarak said.
"And a violation of our sacred vows of neutrality."
"Really? Then tell me why Feishan is suddenly afraid of a weapon powerful enough to topple countries."
Yang Chen rose in one fluid motion of airbending, her element lifting her high off the floor before she landed on her feet.
"Your organization is either corrupt or incompetent. Which is it?"
"We will conduct an investigation as to how the Earth King could have come about his suspicions."
The Unarok's voice was level.
"We all know you're not corrupt."
Yang Chen bowed formally to them. Blood had been drawn from both sides, and now the proceedings were over.
"Thank you for saving my life," she said.
Icier than the waters they'd passed through.
"Now, if you don't mind, I need to go figure out how to keep the four nations from backsliding into chaos over a power that should never have seen the light of day. A situation I believe everyone here is partially to blame for."
Her parting shot was aimed at Kovic.
"Some more than others."
He wasn't going to argue that point.
"Please, wait," he said. "We sought you out for a reason. Finding you in the Spirit Oasis wasn't part of the plan, but we did need to talk."
Yang Chen wasn't listening. She was already by the door, and there was no time left to broach the topic smoothly. Ayunarok stood up.
"Take the kid back."
Outrage alone stopped the Avatar from leaving. She turned around slowly. Kovic knew she wanted them to see her say no.
"Another trade,"
Ayunarok said, needing to work fast.
"The White Lotus wants one of our own, posted by your side. And Kovic is a known quantity to us both. In return for letting him travel with you again, we'll help you end the Platinum Affair. That is your ultimate goal, no? Restoring peaceful relations between the four nations?"
"It was my goal," Yang Chen shouted. "At this rate, I'll be lucky not to preside over a collection of ruined cities with arbitrary lines drawn between them."
Kovic needed a moment to process the exchange. He'd already known about Yang Chen's distaste for the poverty and exploitation of the Shang system. He assumed by establishing a presence in Bin-Ur, she was simply focusing on the sickest patient, like a doctor. She'd declare victory once she fixed a few problems, then move on. But her aims went farther up the chain, as she was fond of saying. He could see her logic. If political tensions were the reason behind a corrupt arrangement and continually threatened to fester into real violence, then best to attack the problem at the source. The heads of the four nations. His former boss was after Big Quarry. Yang Chen was trying to undo history itself.
"It's not too late to work in concert,"
Ayunarok said.
We'll speak peace into the ears of Chief Oyuluk and Lord Gonryu while you do what you can with Feishan.
Call it a hunch, Yang Chen said, batting her eyelashes. But I have the distinct feeling that the last time the White Lotus tried to influence world rulers through secret whispers, it didn't go so well. Ayunarok's methods weren't working.
Can we talk?
Kavik asked Yang Chen while he still had the chance.
Alone?
She made the deep, scoffing snort he remembered so well. What makes you think you, of all people, can convince me?
I can't. I just want to catch up.
He had the feeling she only agreed, because it gave them both the chance to dismiss Ayunarok. They did it in tandem, as if they'd rehearsed it, both opting for the silent head tilt toward the door. Revenge must have been a long time coming for Yang Chen, because judging from the smirk on her face, she took as much glee from the moment as he did. Kavik's current boss narrowed her eyes and shuffled outside. He caught a grumble about the attitude of ungrateful children as she passed. Once she was gone, he didn't wait.
I'm sorry,
he said as soon as the door closed. He'd never truly apologized when they last spoke.
I'm sorry for everything, letting the firebenders get away the first time, sneaking up on you in the oasis.
For betraying you. He couldn't spit those words out. He had to make a different confession instead.
They want me to spy on you. If you let me travel with you again, I'd be sending reports on you to Ayunarok.
Yang Chen rolled her eyes. I gathered. Thanks.
Is it so bad to have someone watching over your shoulder? Look at what happened tonight. Ayunarok wasn't wrong. Journeying alone is dangerous in either world, spirit or human. The White Lotus could help you if you played along with them.
Back when they still worked together, Yang Chen would occasionally display a perfect memory for someone else's words, down to the mood and inflection. She did it now, crossing her arms in sullen mockery of Kavik, even lowering her voice in a passable impression of his. I value my freedom. He'd forgotten how good an actor she was, and how infuriating she could be.
Fine. Waste of time, I get it, he said. Can you at least tell me how our friends are doing?
Yang Chen threw her head back and laughed. Like I would ever reveal anything to you anymore about unanimity. This conversation was going so sideways, they were threatening to end up in the spirit world.
Not the firebenders, you flying hog monkey. I mean our actual friends. Taegum, Akudan, Jujinta. Are they well? Are they alive?
Her expression turned pensive. They're fine. She wasn't so cruel as to deny him that information. But they're not happy about having to lie low. Akudan and Taegum built a life for themselves in Jeondudi, and it's no longer safe for them there. You cost them their home, Kavik. That hurt. That arrow he was obligated to take in his guts. The pain was the price of knowing they were unharmed.
This is why I want back in, he muttered. I need to face them again. Jujinta, too. I need to let them all have their say. When somebody just vanishes on you for good or ill, it eats away at you.
Another scoff, but weaker this time. Less pronounced. His argument, born of Kalyan ditching their family in Bin-Ur, had penetrated her defenses. She tapped her foot and looked around the room. I could give you a blessing of forgiveness on their behalf, and then you could be on your merry way. The salve for his conscience wasn't hidden under the mattress.
You could, but that's not what I'm asking for.
The Avatar opened her mouth to lay down her final verdict, but before she could speak, Ayunarok barged back inside.
Narrowly avoided a patrol, she said. We're still clear for now, But either way, this little spat has gone on long enough. The White Lotus knows Vashon's on the verge of declaring war upon the rest of the world, and that the leaders of the other nations will reciprocate. You need our influence to ensure cooler heads prevail, she said. And if that doesn't appeal to you, I'll give you one last ultimatum. Either the kid's an Avatar's companion again, or else Oyuluk's forces inevitably catch him on this very trip. And then all those precious secrets inside his head become compromised.
Wait, what? Kovic said. What's that supposed to mean?
A Unarak ignored him. She was only addressing Yang Chen at the moment.
I can't get Kovic out of Agna Kala's safely, she said. Currently, I don't have the resources to extract a secondary asset. The only way he doesn't get pinched is if you fly him out of the city undercover.
Wait a second!
A flush of outrage crept up Kovic's neck.
You brought me here without an escape route, on purpose?
Typical, Yang Chen said. She rubbed her eyes, a sign she'd reached the limits of her endurance. The Sang and Pai Show and generalship both is prior to the battle break the cooking pots. Make a bad move on purpose to force the hand of enemy and ally both. A Unarak didn't even have the decency to look smug about her gambit. Putting Kovic's life in danger was merely an inconvenient but necessary step in the recipe she was following.
The Avatar will make faster progress ending the Platinum Affair, and the White Lotus will get assurances from a source both sides know well. Our pride keeps us from cooperating, and that's an emotion only kings and fools can afford. Those of us who work from the shadows aren't supposed to make decisions out of pride.
She'd finally picked the right choice of words, because Yang Chen briefly made the face of a patient forced to drink sour medicine. No one here was happy, nor were they friends. The start of a true compromise. The agreement couldn't be spoken out loud. It was too fragile, and would have collapsed under its own weight. A howl of wind and the chill that crept through the walls reminded them that whatever their human concerns were, the temperature had fallen too far. Venturing outside right now posed the risk of freezing. So as not to break the spell, each of them silently picked a corner of the room to curl up in for the night. Kovic drifted off to sleep with a bleary vision of the Avatar hugging her knees, her gray eyes wide open under her troubled brow. 2 weeks earlier. Nearly every conversation Kovic had with a Unarak in the Gidu safe house was held over a game of Pai Show. Breakdowns of his performance during bending training? Pai Show. Updates on the events of the outside world? Pai Show. And now, mission briefings could be added to the list.
This plan of yours will never work,
Kovic said as he placed a sacrificial rose tile.
The Avatar's not the forgiving soul you think she is.
I'm well aware the girl can hold a grudge,
a Unarak said. She laid down a boat, far from where the local infighting took place on the board.
I give it 3 chances in 10 of success. Well worth pursuing.
Kovic had to think about her move for a while. Not only was it a bizarre play, bereft of any meaning to him, but the section of the grid she'd dropped her piece in was so worn from age and use, the grid lines were difficult to see. The board had been stored in a chest under several layers of wax cloth, and the dark, fine-grained wood it was milled from might have been older than the shrine itself. Maybe there was no point to the move, and it was merely a distraction to make him waste his energy.
The trick is, we'll be forthright about it,
a Unarak said.
We'll admit your purpose is to be her White Lotus liaison. If she accepts, She's going to do everything she can to keep her most important secrets from you. Especially the location of unanimity.
The scenario had been flipped upside down. Yang Chen had trusted him implicitly, once, because she knew he wasn't a plant.
We're going for persistence here, not cleverness,
a Unirock went on.
She's human. She'll make a mistake and let some information slip. Or she'll drop enough clues for you to fit together, bright young man that you are. Feel free to loosen her guard however you can. Give her that little pout and melt her heart if you have to.
Kavik cut off the boat tile from the main formation by laying his chrysanthemum down with a hard snap of his pointer and middle fingers, loud enough to be considered a rude act in the context of a serious game. Unirock was unfazed by his annoyance and his line of play both.
Once you're able to confirm the location of the firebenders, you send me a message immediately, she said. One of our teams will move in to extract them from the Avatar's control, and then your end of the bargain is finished.
When he didn't respond, she glanced up from the board.
You look awfully troubled for someone who's doing a service for humanity.
She placed another tile, but kept her finger over the design, preventing him from seeing what it was.
Do you think destructive power of that scale should remain under the control of an impetuous child?
I'm her age, and you're relying on me to snatch it away from her, Kavik thought.
Unirock pulled her hand back to reveal her society's namesake, Peace. From its position in the center, the white lotus tile could dominate the near spaces in each quadrant. Played too early, the move would have been so terrible that the only conceivable purpose would be a signal to the opponent. She'd saved it for mid-game, where it could distort the final shapes of the board, unchallenged.
The Avatar is right about one thing,
Unirock said.
The rulers of the four nations cannot get their hands on those benders. But neither does that mean she can be trusted to make the final call on how to deal with them. Someone has to act with wisdom and foresight when the leaders of the world aren't up to the task.
You.
Us, Kavik. You're inside now, as inside as it gets.
Unirock stared into his eyes as if to check his depths for resolve.
The quicker we get the firebenders into our custody, the sooner we can focus on extracting your brother from Chai Si's organization.
Kavik's price. Neither side had come to this arrangement out of the goodness of their hearts. Unirock wanted a plant who could recognize the firebenders by face. Kavik refused to cooperate unless she promised safety for his family. His entire family. The fact that Kavik had to deliver first made it clear who had the advantage in the bargain.
The chances she takes me back are worse than 3 in 10. More like slim to none.
But if she does cave, you'll have more of her forgiveness than you think. Consider it from her perspective.
A smile crept across Unirock's lips.
What kind of monster would betray the Avatar twice?